A conversation with the President of the United States.
Kai Ryssdal sits down with Barack Obama.
From APM American Public Media, I'm Jeremy Hobson in Los Angeles.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith in New York. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org for Thursday, March 22nd.
Coming up, New York gets a taste of one of LA's favorite burger joints.
And a look at who Americans blame for the recession.
It's all coming up on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
It's the second day of President Obama's energy tour. He'll be in Oklahoma and Ohio, touting his all-of-the-above strategy, that is, using wind and solar along with oil and natural gas.
But come Monday, the president will have another issue to worry about, the future of his health care law. The Supreme Court will hear arguments next week on the constitutionality of health care reform. Marketplace's Kai Ryssdal sat down with President Obama yesterday in Nevada and asked him about it.
Friday, as I'm sure you know, is the second anniversary of the Affordable Care Act, your health care law. It goes before the Supreme Court on Monday for a what you can only call a marathon hearing. I wonder, as you look at a country that still is divided over that law, if there's anything you'd have done differently to be in this place now getting ready to enact it with more of a mandate, with more popular support.
Well, I would have loved to have gotten it done quicker, which is part of the reason why we designed a program that actually previously had support of Republicans, including the person who may end up being the Republican standard bearer and is now pretending like he came up with something different. It is a program that says we're going to continue to have a private marketplace for health care, but we're going to allow consumers to pool their resources. We're going to make sure consumers are protected, and we're going to make sure that if folks don't currently have insurance, that they've got a means of doing it at a reasonable rate.
Let me ask you the follow-on question then about the Supreme Court on Monday. Yeah. Assuming, as I'm sure you do, that you will prevail in the Supreme Court with the case over the individual mandate, you will have beaten in court 26 states. That is the majority of states. You will have to depend on them to execute your plan to reform the healthcare system in this country, and yet they will be unwilling and unwelcome partners. Are you confident you can still get it done even after all this acrimony?
Absolutely. Because, frankly, these lawsuits that were filed were basically uniformly filed by Republicans who wanted to score political points. And even some of those who filed suit are actually behind the scenes working with us to prepare for a day where we've got exchanges in these states where people can be part of a larger pool so they can get a bit better deal on their insurance. And it will be very hard to for any governor to explain why it is that they're not giving people and small businesses, not just individuals, an opportunity to get cheaper health insurance, better deal, more protections, because of some ideological argument that they're having with the president. And when people see that, in fact, it works, it makes sense, as it's, by the way, working in Massachusetts, then I think a whole bunch of folks will say, why aren't we trying it as well? And, you know, historically, when you look at the history of Social Security, when you look at the history of Medicaid, some of the same controversies have come up, some of the same resistances come up. But ultimately, when people actually saw that it was helping them, helping their lives, when young people right now find out that 2.5 million young people are getting health insurance who didn't have it because they can stay on their parents' plan, or when seniors learn that, you know what, this is actually helping me reduce my cost of prescription drugs, or families and small businesses realize they're in a better position to get health care, you know, over time, as it gets implemented, I think people will say this was the right thing to do.
Meanwhile, with gas prices climbing and the bankruptcy of White House-backed solar company Solyndra, Obama's been pushing back against Republican criticism of White House energy and economic policies. Here's another part of Kai's sit-down with the president.
Both Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum made the case that their platforms of economic freedom are the way to go. They say you're not doing enough. They say you haven't been doing enough. You shrug, but that's, you know, I mean, you know what they're saying. So the question is, make this close the sale, right? Because you keeping your job in November is going to be depending on how people feel about whether you did it or you didn't do it as you promised 3.5 years ago.
Look, you know, I think at a time when people are still out there struggling around the country, where unemployment is still too high and a lot of folks are still worried about their mortgage, their home being underwater. Nobody, I think, can claim that we are where we want. But I think when the American people think back to the last 3 years and where we've been and where we're moving towards now, when you ask them what has more likelihood of succeeding, a policy in which we're providing additional tax cuts to the very wealthiest Americans, who are the only folks who've benefited from any significant income growth over the past decade, stripping away regulations that help keep our air and water clean, defunding things like education that we know are going to help us to be competitive. When you ask them, is that a recipe for long-term economic growth, their answer is going to be no. And when you turn to them and say, should we be investing in school reform that puts more money in, but also demands greater accountability and make sure that we're investing in teachers? Should we be rebuilding our infrastructure? Should we be investing in clean energy technology? Should we be investing in basic research and science? And should we pay for that and get our deficit under control with a balanced approach that gets rid of programs that don't work, but is also making sure that folks like me are paying our fair share of taxes? Then that's the recipe that they have a lot more confidence will allow us to be competitive in the 21st century. So, the debate is going to be joined. I think it's going to be a healthy one. But the fact is, we've tried what they're peddling. We tried it in the decade before the financial crisis. Shoot, we tried it before the decade before the Great Depression. And historically, that recipe, that sort of on-your-own economics, that is now being warmed over in this campaign, has not been a recipe for American greatness and American economic success.
And in today's Midday Extra, we have Kai here in the studio with us to give us the inside scoop on his interview with President Obama. Hey, Kai.
Hey, Stacey.
So, Kai, you sat down with the president in kind of an unusual spot. Set the scene for us, if you will.
The president, as you know, is on a renewable energy tour. And yesterday we went to the Copper Mountain Solar Facility. We're about 36 miles south-southeast of Nevada, which means we were all way out in the Nevada desert, surrounded by a million square feet of solar panels. So we were way out there.
Wow. And it was hot, you mentioned.
It was hot. It was there was a breeze, though, so it was nice. But it was you know why they put the solar cells out there, right? They get 320 days of sunshine a year. I don't mind telling you the backs of my ears are a little bit sunburned. I forgot to do that with the sunblock yesterday morning.
Well, Kai, you mentioned that the president is on an energy tour right now. Why the focus on energy as opposed to other big economic issues like jobs or housing?
Because gas is $3.85.9 a gallon. That's why. And because his Republican opponents are beating up on him about him not being able to do more, about the fact that his energy policy has, in their words, failed. And he realizes that for all you can say about the war in Afghanistan, for all you can say about international policy, this election will still hinge largely on economics. And the thing that's hitting people right now is paying $55 to fill up a tank of gas. And what that actually does, Stacey, is that takes the payroll tax cut, the tax cut that the president and the Republicans agreed on last year,
right,
that $40 a paycheck tax cut, takes it out of their pockets again. And the president sees that that's a bad thing for him politically, and so he wants to change perceptions.
Hmm. Well, in your conversation, the president touched on jobs. And one of the things that he proposed, which I found pretty surprising, was rolling out a bunch of big infrastructure projects. Kind of sounded like Roosevelt's New Deal. What was your impression of that program?
Well, I think the president believes, as do many on the Democratic side, that short-term deficits are not the thing to worry about in this economy, that what they really have to concentrate on is getting employment back. The president mentioned $1 trillion worth of infrastructure programs yesterday, as you remember. And while spending is certainly a problem, it's not the short-term issue. That's a long-term deficit problem. And what he wants to do is get the economy going. You know, you look around at the nation's bridges and roads, and you can see we have things that need to be done. The question is, how can we effectively do that, right? I mean, you know, you can dig a hole in the ground and fill it in again, and that's a stimulus program. But really what we need is concrete progress on that. And that, I think, is the problem the president's going to have convincing Congress and the Republicans in Congress that that's something we ought to do.
Now, another thing that the president mentioned towards the end of your conversation was economic freedom versus regulation. And I was wondering if you got the feeling that he was gearing up for this to be a big election year issue.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I'm the guy who brought up the phrase economic freedom. I quoted Governor Romney and Senator Santorum to him in their post-Illinois primary speeches. They both said, you know, our path, my path is economic freedom. The president's path is not. And we, the Republicans, can make that case for you. The president now, I think you can plainly say, is in economic campaign mode. He realizes, as I said a moment ago, that that's what this election is going to hinge on, and he's not going to cede the ground. I think he's going to go out there and take it to him, much as they are taking it to him in their primary season.
So, Kai, before I let you go, you had limited time with the president. Was there anything you wished you'd had time to ask that you didn't get a chance to?
So we had 36 hours notice, basically, that this was going to happen. And literally everybody at Marketplace pitched in with ideas. The logistics were amazing. And it all comes to a moment of clarity when you sit down with the president and you say, welcome to the broadcast, Mr. President. And from there, you're kind of off and running. So in retrospect, the only thing I wish is that we had more time. You know, he's a busy guy. We had 17 minutes all in, which was great. And if we had had more, we could have talked about more stuff. But that's about it.
And finally, Kai, as strange as this may sound, I just have to ask, what's he like?
He's taller than you think. He's about an inch taller than I am, which I don't think I expected.
Taller than you are, because you're a tall guy.
Yeah. But, you know, you don't get to have that job unless you are really good at talking and connecting to people. And you get that sense from the moment he starts shaking your hand. It's the man's the president of the United States. And it's an interesting moment when he's focusing his attention on you.
Do you feel like you must have done something right?
Well, you know, who knows? I mean, it was it's a little bit luck. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than smart. How about that?
There you go. Words of wisdom from our own Kai Ryssdal. Kai, thanks very much.
You bet.
And you can hear the full interview between Kai Ryssdal and President Obama, including the president's answers on housing, energy, and the economy. They're all at marketplace.org.
We just heard President Obama tell Kai he thinks Americans want more than just on your own economics. That brings us to our weekly Attitude Check, a partnership with Gallup.
And the latest poll numbers suggest margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said.
Frank Newport, Gallup's editor-in-chief, joins us now to talk about what Americans think about the economy. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Stacey.
Who do Americans blame for our economic situation? President Obama, President Bush, Congress? Who's to blame?
Well, it's to some degree all of the above. We and other people have asked these questions. And actually, last time we asked it, people were still blaming the Bush administration more than they were the Obama administration. So Obama gets a pass on that. People do still think, to some degree, that we are living in the residual of what happened in the previous administration.
Do Americans think that Obama has restricted economic freedom?
Well, you know, that's a very, very interesting and sometimes paradoxical part of American public opinion. All of what the president talks about has some resonance with the American public. They do think that the government has a role to play and there should be regulations. They, on the other hand, are concerned about freedom. In fact, we have a record high number of Americans who say that the government regulates business and industry too much, as an example. And over half of Americans say government has too much power and does too much that should be left to business and industry. So when you listen to what Obama says, a lot of the specifics do make sense to Americans in isolation, but taken as a broad whole, what the data show is Americans are very concerned in a general sense about too much government. And that's that little middle ground that he and the Republicans are trying to get to. What's the balance between government doing too much and not doing enough?
Well, speaking of that, do we have a sense of how Americans feel about business and environmental regulations?
Oh, we do. We just asked that question, and Americans say it's more important to have economic growth, for example, than it is to have be overly concerned about the environment. That's flipped. When the economy is doing well, people say, oh, the environment's paramount. But now this year, and also last year, Americans are saying economic growth is more important than being concerned about the environment.
Frank Newport, Gallup's editor-in-chief. Frank, thank you.
Good to be with you.
A conservative reporter and activist named Jason Matera just published what he thought was a hard-hitting interview with U2's Bono on Breitbart.com. It featured questions about U2's tax practices and was picked up by some conservative news outlets. Well, it turns out it wasn't the real Bono he was interviewing. It was a Bono impersonator. Matera told the Washington Post, quote, "I got punked."
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace Music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
So, Stacey, when I moved to Los Angeles, everyone told me, maybe even you, that I needed to try a gourmet hamburger at the place around here called Umami Burger.
Oh, Umami Burger.
It's very
great.
Good. It's very good, although I thought that the burger was a little dainty, you know, for 15
dainty.
Bucks.
well,
not very
okay.
big.
Yeah, okay, you're right.
It was all about the gourmet. And frankly, I'm okay with just the, you know, I'm okay with a burger. I love burgers, and I'm okay with just a non-gourmet hamburger.
With the Big Mac.
That's right. But I mean, not a Big Mac necessarily, but I like the regular old-fashioned burgers. Not everyone agrees with me, apparently, because the gourmet hamburger business is now a $2 billion industry in the United States. And Umami Burger is getting ready to test the market for $15 burgers nationwide, as Jennifer Collins reports.
All right.
I'm in the kitchen at Umami's newest location in downtown Los Angeles.
All right, I need some burgers.
In 3 years, the chain's opened 8 locations. Now there are plans for several more. In New York, Houston, Miami, and Las Vegas, the kitchens will be stocked with truffle oil, parmesan, shiitake mushrooms, wasabi. There's just one rule. No substitutions.
We're not a build-your-own-burger chain.
Adam Fleischman is Umami's founder.
We try to give it to you the way we think it's the best.
But food industry analyst Darren Tristano says the can't-have-it-your-way strategy could be tough.
Americans have come to expect customizable meals that are prepared to order, and it will be difficult to hear the words, you know, you have to eat it this way.
Still, enough people are buying these high-end burgers to justify the expansion. And Umami's already planning new meats for the menu.
Maybe a rabbit burger down the road?
A rabbit burger, served just so, in Los Angeles.
Do you guys do to-go here?
I'm Jennifer Collins for Marketplace.
An Umami burger and the truffle fries?
When I was growing up, the Etch-A-Sketch seemed like a pretty nonpartisan toy. Well, not anymore. This week, it got all tangled up in the Republican primary campaign after Mitt Romney's spokesman Eric Fernstrom said this.
Well, I think you hit a reset button for the fall campaign. Everything changes. It's almost like an Etch-A-Sketch. You can kind of shake it up and we start all over again.
Romney's opponents have pounced on that comment, and the Ohio Art Company, which makes the Etch-A-Sketch, is loving the publicity. Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
There is a market for nostalgia toys. Cabbage Patch Kids, Strawberry Shortcake, Monopoly. Doodle the Etch-A-Sketch into that space. It came out in 1960, but company sales at privately held Ohio Art reportedly peaked 20 years ago. Here's Forrester Research's Sucharita Molparu.
Nostalgia alone isn't going to support your business because that depends on the people who experienced it when they were little, and they will eventually go away.
She says now's the time to cash in on the political attention, the same way stuffed bears took off during the Teddy Roosevelt administration. How's that for nostalgia? An Ohio art spokesman has referenced shaking up the political debate. Longer term, the key to toy maker success is digital. Social networking, TV cartoons, video games.
The digitization of the world has creeped over into the toy industry and what's important to children.
Etch-A-Sketch does have an iPad app, and a new Etch-A-Sketch jewelry brooch is on the way, complemented with expensive crystals, perhaps an entree to the wealthy crowd, say private equity types. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
Okay, Jeremy, well, I know that you're on Facebook because we're Facebook friends.
Yep.
And I hope you don't find yourself thinking this about me, but certainly we've all been there. Do you ever find yourself wishing you'd hear a little less from certain friends?
Oh, yeah. I love that. One of my favorite things about Facebook is that option where you can tell it not to show you stuff from certain people because they just post all the time.
Yes, exactly. Baby photos, dogs, like what they're eating for lunch. Some people just kind of can take over your newsfeed. Well, Facebook has a solution. It just unveiled a new tool that lets you demote a friend.
Oh.
I know, to an acquaintance, which means they will show up a whole lot less in your newsfeed. But your friends are... Well, I guess they would now be your acquaintances, won't be notified.
That's a nice thing that Facebook does is that, you know, they don't notify people when you do something mean to them.
I know. Like, I hope you won't demote me, Jeremy.
I will not demote you, Stacey.
So you can see all the photos of my lunch.
You don't post all the time, so it's, you know, it's fine.
Not yet.
In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And in New York, I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith. And this is the Marketplace Midday Update.
This is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.